Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info and other things. It's Super Bowl Sunday. I'm sorry.
Way to wimp out on the intro.
Wait. You can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info and other things at facebook.com/ballisticradio. No?
Your team's not even in the Super Bowl.
Let's not talk about that.
You look so hurt.
Co-hosting with me, Jack!
Yay!
So it's Super Bowl Sunday, and most of you are probably going to catch this one on the podcast. But for those of you that are listening, thank you very much. We've got an awesome show lined up with Claude Werner talking about why OODA is not a loop, or I fell into a burning ring of fire. No.
And it burn as my love got higher?
Well, don't talk about your habits on air. I mean, just... This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat! Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, without further ado... One of my very, very favorite people, Claude Werner. Claude, how are you doing tonight?
Living the dream, John. How about you?
I certainly can't complain, because then my likability would go down even more than it already has. And then it'd be at zero, which would be bad. So for those that have not heard you on the show before, which how dare they, can you go over your background just real quick and then we'll jump right in?
Retired Army officer, subject matter expert on the OODA loop, former chief instructor of the Elite Roger Shooting School, and various other accomplishments in my life.
Well, there you go. So why not tell people what we're going to be talking about tonight?
What I wanted to talk about is thinking ahead, which is really what John Boyd was thinking about in his overall scheme of maneuver, if you will, and that gets confused a lot. People look at the diagram of the OODA loop, and especially those horrible little simplistic circular diagrams, and they think that's what it's about. And that's not really what John Boyd was about. And I'd like to start to clarify that misconception.
So let's, I guess, back up a little bit. Talk about what the OODA loop is and who John Boyd was, for those that are not fully immersed into our world yet.
John Boyd was an Air Force colonel, he's deceased now, who was one of the prime movers in the adoption of the F-16 fighter. But more importantly, he became a strategist in the later part of his career, and actually, much of what he did contributed to our success in the first Gulf War. He was instrumental in formulating that strategy that led to that that victory. Cool. Later in Boyd's career, when he was talking about strategy, he, in a few cases, referred to what he called the OODA loop: observe, orient, decide, and act. But actually, this was a relatively small part of his philosophy, if you will, but it's also one of the ones that's easily diluted and simplified, and that's really what's happened is the industry has seized on this one small portion of Boyd's philosophy and has then tried to turn it into something that I really don't think Colonel Boyd ever intended it to be.
Well, that never happens, Claude. We never take, ideas or concepts or names for ourselves and completely pervert it into something that it was never intended to be. Never.
I know. It doesn't happen.
So as far as the explain how people see the OODA loop currently, and then we'll go from there.
The most common way that it's depicted is this circular diagram that essentially will have four segments of it or four points on it or whatever, and they'll just go observe, orient, decide, and act.
Right.
And then what the commentators will, and I like to spell that as commentators, as in, potatoes. What the commentators will then try to tell people is that this OODA loop is actually a decision model and a way of, I'm using air quotes here, thinking faster.
Right.
Which in fact, it is not. The truth of the matter is what the OODA loop, as John Boyd described it, it's a post-event analytical process. It is not a decision model. And that's the problem that I have with the way it is depicted in the training industry today, as if it is a process that you go through at the moment, and you're thinking, well, I need to observe, and now I'm going to orient. Now I'll decide, and now I'll act. Well, that's not the way it works at all. And that is actually never the way Colonel Boyd described it. He described it as an after-action way of describing what the events had happened, and then how do you improve that process in the future?
Well, we've got about 45 seconds left in this segment, so I'm trying to decide what thing of substance we can point out to people. So in general, it's the issue right now is that people have oversimplified this or just don't have
a good
understanding.
They've oversimplified it, and they've misapplied it, and they don't really understand what Colonel Boyd was talking about in the first place.
All right. Perfect. You did actually too good of a job of going over that quickly, because now we've got 15 seconds, and I have to eat up that airtime by saying nothing of any substance at all.
Aerial attack study.
Exactly.
Just put that in there. Aerial attack study.
Hey, look, now it's a break. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio! This segment brought to you by Dark Star Gear! Whether you know the color of the boathouse at Hereford or only know the color of your mom's basement, Cheeto-stained socks, and her earth-shattering disappointment in your poor life choices, Dark Star Gear has a solution to your gear-carrying needs. Check out their clip-on holsters for small semi-autos and revolvers, or their highly adjustable full-size AIWB holster. They even have a belt-wrapped sheath for popular fixed-blade centerline knives to really tie your everyday carry together, like that one rug I used to have before the golfer ruined it. Designed, developed, and pressure-tested for real life, not Instagram or other forms of social media that don't actually signify your importance. Ooh. Find out more at darkstrikegear.com. Wow, Jack. You okay?
I mean, there are only certain social media sites that mean you're important.
Like Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook, totally important.
The 232,000 followers on Facebook that we have is...
That's a sign of us actually being intelligent, but if you were...
No, it's not. No, we don't actually matter either, Jack.
Would you like to buy these detox wraps?
Look at this cool stuff. Would you like a wrap? Sorry. You'd have to be friends with us on our actual Facebook pages to know why that's funny. Or maybe not. Maybe you'll get it. I don't. Anyway, Claude Werner. Claude, are you still there?
I still am.
I'm sorry for you, sir, but thank you for not leaving. We're talking about Colonel Boyd and the misappropriation of the OODA cycle or loop or whatever by our industry. And we're going to set the record straight. So what is it actually. It's not like a cool circular infographic, despite what the interwebs would have us believe. So talk about it for reals.
No, actually, if you look at Colonel Boyd's original hand-drawn sketch, it's actually three fairly complex diagrams, which consist of two that I think of as the action model and the analytical model, and then Colonel Boyd overlaid them into this third diagram that is actually pretty complex. It has feedback loops, feed-forward loops, a bunch of inputs to it, and it's much, much more complicated than this ridiculous circular diagram that the industry tries to portray. So
it's like a Stanley Kubrick film.
Somewhat like that, yes, indeed. Yeah, it's not that easy to understand, and it's certainly not at first glance. And it doesn't lend itself to this simplistic analysis that's often given.
Hey, I've got one more. It's Slaughterhouse-Five, not Transformers. That's
okay. I can accept that.
Okay, perfect. Anyway, please continue.
So, really, the substance, I like to think of this not as the OODA loop, but I like to think of John Boyd's work in total as Boyd's process.
Okay.
The OODA loop is a part of it, but and you had mentioned that you needed something to fill the 15 seconds before the break, and I said the aerial attack study.
Yes, please get into
that. The aerial attack study was actually John Boyd's first major attempt to codify tactics for the United States Air Force, at least fighter tactics.
Okay.
And it is so completely the opposite of the way that people describe the OODA loop that it bears a great deal of study, because it's utterly the opposite of the OODA loop. The way trainers frequently describe the OODA loop is something where you're going to outthink your opponent and think faster and so forth and so on, as if you're going to devise all these wonderful tactical plans. Somehow you're going to speed up your brain. Can you speed up your brain, John?
Well, not without some substances I am not willing to put in my body. So
exactly. None of us can. It's physiologically impossible.
Now, if I can get a hold of some of that spice melange, then we'll be safe.
Yeah, there you go. But short of that, no, we can't do it. So what we do instead is that we think ahead of time about what our possible situations are and then what our possible reactions are. And those possible reactions are driven by our capabilities. For instance, in the aerial attack study, Colonel Boyd had an extensive knowledge of the missile capabilities, at that time the Sidewinder missile, the cannon on the F-105 aircraft or the F-100 aircraft, and the defensive armament of the Russian bombers.
Okay.
As well as the defensive and offensive armaments of Russian fighters. So by studying these and how they interacted, and then where the fighter, let's say a fighter on an intercept of a Russian bomber attacking the United States continental cities, that there were actually only four possibilities that the fighter pilot could proceed upon. And they were all based on where the fighter was in relation to the bomber when the fighter got the alert. It was either in front of it, abeam of it, above it, and to the rear, or below it, to the rear. And all of the maneuvers that the fighter would do would be to put themselves in a position at the 6 o'clock low of the bomber so they could fire a missile and hit it.
Right.
Because the performance envelope of the Sidewinder required it to be fired in that. And then because the Sidewinder was not 100% reliable at that time, there was the possibility it would fail.
Right.
And the attack would not work. So then the fighter pilot of the F-100 would have to bore in to a given distance that maximized the ability of his cannon to hit the target while minimizing the ability of a bomber's defensive armament to hit him. So this was very programmed, if you will.
Yeah.
And so what the pilot had was four choices, and that was it. And they were all essentially pre-laid out. So then all the fighter pilot had to do was go, am I in front of it? Okay, then I execute this maneuver, which will bring me up underneath it. And, you know, all the rest of the approaches were similar. Just the aerial maneuver they would go through was different based on their position in relation to the aircraft. But their eventual outcome was the same, to end up at 6 o'clock of the bomber and low of it where they could maximize the likelihood their missile would hit it.
So let me.
So there was no OODA-ing or thinking faster or anything about that. The thinking faster came from already having your decisions made and simply picking from a menu.
So essentially, what we're talking about, I guess, is the difference between, as John Hearn would call it or discusses it in his presentation, novel stimuli versus familiar stimuli. So once we understand what situation we're in and can pick the appropriate action, we're pretty much on autopilot, kind of?
Exactly it.
So
we're executing a decision that we have made at some point in advance of the event, and that's exactly it. We're carrying it through on autopilot.
So let me back up even further. What we're talking about is recognizing the situations that will call for a given response, and you know, let's say going the guns where we need to shoot someone. And once we've recognized that that's what the game we're playing, it all boils down to, at that point, executing, you know, good trigger presses multiple times, putting rounds on target until the threat stops, right?
Or vice versa, that we may recognize the situation has proceeded past the point where guns are appropriate. And much of this discussion came about from a incident that took place in California last Friday, two days ago, where a man was carjacked and was forced out of his van. And then as it was driving away, he started shooting at it. And his marksmanship, his trigger pressing was good. He killed the person who carjacked him. Unfortunately, the police said, you know what, the danger to you was already gone, so therefore put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest, and you're being charged with murder.
So when we really look at it then, what we're trying to do is putting as many appropriate responses into our data banks as possible, and need to be able to recognize rather quickly under pressure which the appropriate response is and then apply it accordingly?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly it. That we have to do a stop start. It's appropriate. It's inappropriate. This is the solution, or this is not the solution for the particular problem I'm in. And then once we understand that, and that has legal inputs, it has moral inputs, it has physical inputs. You know, to go back to your analogy of trigger pressing, can I actually pull this off? And that is not as quite always as simple an affair as people might think.
Well, so that once again, when we're talking about like the work that Colonel Boyd did, is he understood the capabilities of everything that was involved in the thing that he was studying. So he knew what the weapons capabilities were of, you know, the bombers, the fighters on either side, and was making decisions based off of knowing what those capabilities were. By extension, if we're talking about it in our context, knowing what kind of shots you can make, sort of fall into that?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's why I'm a big believer in periodically testing yourself to find out what actually am I capable of doing? You know, there's a drill that I have on my blog about what distance can you reliably hit the seven ring of a B-27 target. Right. Now, people who have been shooting for a while take that for granted that they can do that 100% of the time. Unfortunately, we have a lot of new people, you know, as Rich Grassi puts it, gun culture 2.0, who are new gun owners. Right. And they have to learn yet, first of all, how to shoot, and then second of all, what their capabilities with that system. So, you know, that ability to know what kind of capabilities you have is an inherent part of the Boyd process.
Perfect. Let me interrupt because we have to go to break right now. We're talking with Claude Werner. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Berge, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, competitor shooter, or you are inverted, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for Sig parts and accessories. I didn't get a reaction out of you at all.
Sorry, I was responding to something.
You didn't hear what I said, did you?
I completely missed it. I'm sorry.
I changed the TopGunSupply.com ad just briefly, just one little added thing, and it was amazing, and you missed it.
I'm sorry.
Jack. Claude Werner heard it, I'm sure. Claude, are you still there?
Still here, John.
Perfect. We were talking about people storing these responses to the things that are going on around them and being able to recognize when to apply the proper response. Please continue.
One of the topics or conversations about this that came up is how state laws vary. And in specific, one person brought up the fact that in Texas, in his opinion, and this was somewhat sourced by the Texas Penal Code, I guess it's called, that you could actually shoot at someone in defense of property.
Yes.
And if that may well be true, I'm not an expert on Texas legal system, so can't say for sure. However, my comment was the problem with thinking about that is that as soon as you leave Texas or whatever place that you might be that has a, let's say, a looser standard of legal conduct, then as soon as you leave it, you have to leave that frame of reference behind, which is not something that we do particularly well as humans.
No.
Say, okay, well, I'm only going to do this if I'm in this location, but if I'm in this particular location, then the rules of engagement, if you will, completely change. And I think that's something that we as armed citizens have to keep in mind, that when we go into other places, just like when people go to New York City and are working under the assumption that their weapons carry license is just like your driver's license and it's going to be honored everywhere. And then they get into some other place and they find out, well, no, it doesn't quite work that way here.
Right, right.
And I think that we have to consider that in terms of our, not only the equipment we carry, but the responses that we have to situations that might affect us. So, you know, that's something that I think is pretty important for people to realize that we live in a mobile society now.
Right.
It's not like, you know, even 100 years ago where traveling around wasn't nearly as common. I mean, now, how many states did you and Jack travel through on the way to the SHOT Show?
I don't know. A lot.
Yeah, quite a lot.
13, apparently?
Yeah, something like that. And In each of those states, the various laws will change. For instance, and on a very simplistic basis, your requirement to notify an officer if you're stopped,
right,
that you're carrying weapons. In some states, you don't have to, and in others, it has to be the first thing you do upon contact. Well, that's one of those things that we need to start thinking about ahead of time. And when I say we, I mean the gun-owning community. We need to think about that sort of thing ahead of time and brief ourselves to say, well, okay, now I'm in this state. Do I notify? Do I not notify? You know, what are the various things that I have to be observant of? Because many negative outcomes, as you and I have discussed, do not necessarily relate to criminal incidents, but rather to our interaction with law enforcement officers. That's just the nature of, you know, this thing that we do, this art, as John Farnham calls it.
Yeah.
And so so my thought is that when we're thinking about Boyd's process, it has to be a lot broader, and we have to think about that in a lot more depth than the industry ordinarily does when they talk about this very simplistic OODA loop that I hate that depiction of.
Well, so for our purposes, what do people need to be doing? They need to be thinking about what could or could not happen beforehand, and coming up with, you know, responses or you know, policies or procedures or tactics or whatever you want to label them as ahead of time and sort of proceeding from there?
Yes, exactly. For instance, my response about this California situation was to say exactly the conversation I had with a former girlfriend of mine who lived in kind of a somewhat sketchy area of the city of Atlanta. And what we were sitting in the car one day just starting it up, and I said, if we get carjacked, as long as you and I can both get out of the car, they can have the car.
Yeah.
That's what I have insurance for. No problem. But if you get hung up in the belts or I get hung up in the belts or for whatever reason we both can't get out of the car, then what I want you to do is to turn your face away from me and close your eyes, because I'm going to start shooting, and I don't want his loathsome bloodborne pathogens to get in your eyes.
And I can picture you in my head having this conversation real time, and it is a thing of beauty for me. I just have to say, Claude. So that would be a, you know, an SOP, I guess.
That's exactly what it is. It's a policy, an SOP, however you want to put it, because I think that, and I have found this, where people get really touchy, gun owners, get really touchy about the idea as soon as you mention the word policy. Well, the word policy is nothing more than committing to memory or writing it down sometimes, of what your plan of action is going to be under a given set of circumstances. That's all it is.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of times people just don't want to have a policy, or they want to have this very, what's the word I want to use?
Simplistic?
Very rigid. Simplistic and rigid. For instance, when somebody says, if there's someone in my house,
I'm going to shoot them. Yep.
That's their policy. So what happens if that happens to be your 16-year-old daughter sneaking back in after going to a party at 4 in the morning? Well, then, you know, as happened to a police officer in Virginia last year, he shot her.
Well,
so that's when I started to get on to my thing about, okay, my policy is I have a flashlight next to my pistol at night. And when I pick the, and my policy is when I pick the pistol up, I pick the flashlight up.
Well, so the real issue becomes that when people start imagining these situations, if they don't have a broad enough frame of reference, they cannot imagine any situation where someone in their house might not need to get shot. And
so, exactly.
So they've not come up with a policy for that.
Mm-hmm.
So
and a lot of that comes from the fact that they buy the gun and then they just assume that the gun is the solution for everything.
Right.
And in fact, as you and I both know, a gun is definitely the solution for a very small subset of our problems.
Yeah.
But that subset is very small. And in fact, we need to have policies that don't relate to gunfire, but rather, you know, we manage threats in other ways. You know, go away.
Yeah. Well, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I never ever want to have a, drill or training doctrine or anything named after me. Because that means that I got thrown into something that I did not foresee, did not think about at all beforehand, and I probably did something wrong. So I try and imagine the widest set of circumstances possible so I can have given it some thought ahead of time.
Exactly.
You know.
And I think that we have this broad array of resources available to us as gun owners. For the folks who are members of the National Rifle Association, as I think that everybody who is a gun owner should be a member, but let's confine the conversation for the moment to those who are members.
Well, let me interrupt just real quick. Hold that thought, because we've got to go to break, and I'm kind of weird about like hitting them on time. I don't know why, but we're talking with Claude Werner. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio! This segment brought to you by TacStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter-scale steel target and the arch-frame target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with more than 70,000 rounds of rifle, pistol, and shotgun ammunition now without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. So, we are talking with Claude Werner. Claude, are you still there?
Still here, John.
Well, I have to say, sir, thank you very much for interrupting your evening, and I know there's a sports ball game on right now, and I don't imagine you watching that, but if you did want to watch that and you chose not to come talk to us, I appreciate it. Thank you. So.
Yeah, you're very welcome. You could fit everything I know about professional sports in a thimble and have a lot of room left over, but
well,
nonetheless.
There you go. So we're talking about decision-making processes, and the hijacking of Colonel Boyd's work, by our industry, and sort of discussing what we should do to be a little bit better prepared about things. Talk a little bit more about negative outcomes, if you don't mind, because I think that's something that a lot of people don't consider. It's just as likely, or sometimes even more likely, that we make a mistake that gets us in trouble as it is that we're the heroes of the day, wouldn't you say?
Well, we have both procedures and pitfalls that we have to be aware of. And that's one of the beauties of having a policy, is that when you formulate a policy in your mind, it's an inherent part of that is a way for you to avoid a pitfall. Which is the negative outcomes that that I've talked about in the past, brandishing and getting arrested and unjustifiable shootings and unintentional shootings and so forth. Those are all the negative outcomes that we want to avoid.
Right.
Now, thanks to the bias in the media, we have an ample opportunity to learn about those in a way that probably other similarly tragic incidents don't get reported by the media, but because, for gun owners, if a gun is involved, the media is going to jump on that like a hand grenade.
Right.
That's bad in a way that it portrays things that I think in a light that, could be portrayed better. But on the other hand, what it does do is it gives us an opportunity to understand Well, how did this take place? How did this law enforcement officer or private citizen end up shooting a family member when they shouldn't have? And then thinking about, well, what do I do ahead of time? How do I think about this ahead of time so that doesn't happen to me?
Well, we just
And I think that's a good opportunity.
Yeah, we just had an incident in Cincinnati where a father dropped his son off at the school bus stop, goes back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked about this when it happened, but the son sneaks back into the house because I guess he wanted to skip school and play video games or something like that. And father, you know, I'm going to shoot whoever's broken into my house and kills his son.
That's right.
Negative outcome. So it's something that I think, you know, we need to be cognizant of. Even inside of the community, when something negative happens, I don't know if it's that intellectualism is looked down on these days or what it is, but people don't want to examine things and understand why they happen and take anything from them, and it turns into this ego-based, well, my guy's awesome, so we're not going to talk about it, you know?
Yeah, and part of it, too, is that it's a horrible event. For that poor father will never have a day's peace nor a decent night's sleep again as long as he lives. I'm firmly convinced of that.
Right.
What parent would?
Yeah, yeah.
And so people look at that and they will briefly see it, but they don't want to think about it. And frankly, I don't blame them. Nobody likes to contemplate the horrible. But when we as gun owners have this lethal weapon, it's incumbent on us to make sure that it is used responsibly. So, you know, hence my thing about have a flashlight. Do not be afraid to verbalize. I so hate that thing that has come out of the training community's fascination with shoot houses, that lights draw fire. Or if I speak, the ninja assassins are immediately going to start shooting at me. When in fact, it's a 97% chance, by my calculation, which I actually worked those numbers out, it's a 97% chance that it's a member of your own family.
Well, in that
father's case, simply saying, who's there? You know, well, if he had gotten, hey, it's me, Dad, the FBI calls that a clue.
Well, and I would even hazard to say that, you know, trying to blame it on something as simplistic as, you know, it's come out of shoot houses. It's more of the fact that it's come out of the larger community's misunderstanding of the context of what they're seeing, you know? So when we've got people that are running shoot house classes that are running it from their background in the military and that's how they're presenting it, I don't have a problem with that because it makes sense to me that way there. But if you're running a home defense shoot house and you're using those same techniques and not discussing these things, then yeah, that's where the issue lies, I think.
Okay, and that I can accept that as a further elaboration of this.
Yeah.
That in many cases we're not putting the context of the private citizen onto the training that is being given to private citizens, and it really needs to be there.
If only there was a new company that I may or may not have started that was going to be looking at things like that. But no, seriously, it's something that I'm very much hoping to drive the conversation that direction, where context is discussed by everyone. You know, so at least, and I have nothing against going in and learning things about how the military does things or how police do things, as long as we're discussing it in that context and can separate one from the other from the other. You know.
Or at least in that context, then translate it for those who need the translation. Because you may have an open enrollment class where you have a combination of military members, police officers, and private citizens. And I think it behooves the trainer to be able to make that translation and say, well, this is the situation that's going to apply for a soldier. This is what's going to apply for a law enforcement officer. And for you, private citizen, it's probably different than both of those. You know, so essentially what you have is a Venn diagram of three different circles that overlap to a certain extent,
right,
but not completely. And that part where they do not overlap needs to be explained by the trainer.
Well, and that, yeah, I would like to see more of that as well. We're coming up on the last 2-3 minutes of the show, Claude. So for people, and we'll continue, but I want to make sure that people can find you. We don't run out of time to talk about that. If people want to read more of your work or come take a class with you or anything like that, how would they do that?
They can look at my blog and website, tacticalprofessor.com. Tacticalprofessor.com. That's where I publish my work. If people are interested in my CD about serious mistakes that gun owners make or my pistol practice program, they can. There's a link to my web store there that they can get it. That's probably the easiest way for anybody to find me. I'm also on Facebook as Claude Werner, the Tactical Professor. So that would be another way for people to find me.
Well, there you go. And I will post a link to your web store so people can get your recordings, which I cannot recommend enough. So as far as to sort of recap everything, it seems that the issue becomes that we don't give enough thought to what may occur, and we don't give enough thought as to what we will do if it does occur. That was
convoluted. People need to think about what the situations that they might face, and they're not going to be able to know every one of them, but right, the most likely ones, a carjacking or something, carjacking, home invasion, robbery on the street.
Yeah.
And then make the decisions about what they want to do, what's legal for them to do, what they're physically capable of doing. Make those decisions ahead of time so then they can focus on solving the situation instead of making their decisions.
Well, I think one of the important decisions they might want to make ahead of time is the fact that they might not need to shoot anything or anyone.
Exactly.
That doesn't seem to enter into people's consciousness often enough, for my liking at least.
I agree completely.
So, do you foresee this changing inside of our community anytime soon, or is this probably going to be a battle we're always fighting?
I think that it's probably a battle we're always going to be fighting because new gun owners, almost of necessity, have to focus on the tool first.
Yeah.
Because they have to learn to operate it. It's an unusual tool for most new people. But then what we as a training community need to do is to make people aware of the fact that what they need to know goes beyond that.
Right. Perfect. Claude, I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure.
All right.
Good to talk to you.
Oh, always. You be safe. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay.
All right. Bye. So, next week, I don't know. I'll figure it out. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.